things first. I'm Jenna Wolf. It is great to have the Hall of Famer Chris Carter back in.
I got to turn the ringer off. I've been
gone for a long time.
Welcome back, man.
Good. Last handshake.
This is Nick Wright. As always, you had fun out at the Rose Bowl?
I did. Awesome time.
Yeah?
Yes. Man, you gone for 3 days. Jenna Wolf gets her identity stolen. Everything falls apart.
Infrastructure's crumbling.
Glad to have you back, brother.
Let me tell you something. Somebody's out there, whoever's got her identity, they're confused.
100%.
They thought they was getting Jenna Wolf. They had no clue.
They're like, I didn't steal 6 identities. What's happening here?
Good news is, so is she. Uh-huh. We got a big show today. Jason Garrett knows what it'll take to beat the Seattle Seahawks. Deshaun Watson is pumped up for his playoff debut. But why don't we start with the Philadelphia Eagles? The road to repeating continues Sunday against the Chicago Bears. You know, it's funny if you think about it. Same quarterback as last season, same doubt from skeptics as last season, but a little more of a challenge this time around as the Eagles are the number 6 overall seed as opposed to being the 1 seed last year. 1 seed better than 6 seed. Doug Peterson spoke on his team's challenges entering the postseason.
It does give you a little, you know, comfort knowing that we've kind of went through this grind and you know, we're here now and you just, you know, we have to continue to grind and continue to work, but you know, I don't think it's any easier. It's a different team again, different set of, you know, circumstances. We have to travel. If we're fortunate to win, we got to be on the road again. And, you know, so it feels different, but the excitement is the same. And that's what I think the energy, you know, feeds the building because of that.
All right, CC, if the Eagles are going to do this, if they're going to upset the Chicago Bears, how are they going to do it? What do they have to do?
Man, they have to try to somehow contain that front 7. And we always talk about Khalil Mack anytime you're talking about the Bears. But, man, he's just the beginning of their problems. The Eagles, we know as far as an offense, they like to do a lot of 5-outs. What are 5-outs? That means all the receivers, both their backs, if they have 2 backs in the game or 3 receivers, they all get out in the pattern, so they're only going with 5-man protection. Not hard math, Nick, okay? I know they teach this at Syracuse. 5 men out, you got 5 guys protecting, you got 1 quarterback.
That's all 11 people.
Now, Khalil Mack, they have double-teamed him all season. So how do you do that with Akeem Hicks and him destroying people, man, interior, Floyd on the outside, the speed that they have at linebacker? So for me, they're going to have the best offensive line play that they've had all season, because what the Bears do to you as far as their front 7, and immediately when you get on paper, when you're playing them, you know you have to double team Khalil Mack. So you know you have problems. So how does Zach Ertz have that type of game? Because he's going to be limited. Either him or the running backs will be limited because of their ability to be able to help in pass protection. Because I can guarantee you this. They are not going into the game saying, you know something, we're going to single block Khalil Mack.
No,
because if he does, he'll take over like he did in September when he was traded.
And so you mentioned the Eagles' offensive line having to deal with the Bears' front. I'm going to flip the sides of the ball, because if the Eagles are going to win this game, and Nick Foles is a great story, and if they win this game, he will continue to be a huge part of the story. But if they win this game, it's going to be because they are able to channel what got them their Super Bowl last year, which was excellent offensive line play complemented by spectacular defensive line and pass rush play. And that's what I'm going to be looking for the Eagles in this game. Can they make Mitch Trubisky feel uncomfortable from the start of the game? Can they get after him? All of a sudden, the last few weeks, you are seeing the Eagles' defensive line play its best football of the year. Fletcher Cox coming off just his second career Defensive Player of the Week award. You're seeing Michael Bennett play better. Those guys are going to have to wreak havoc. I think they're going to have to steal at least 1 extra possession right out of the hands of Mitch Trubisky. Either a strip sack, tipped ball that turns into an interception, because I think they are going to have incredible difficulty moving the ball on this Bears defense. This Bears defense is first in points, 3rd in yards, 1st in yards per play, 1st in rush defense, 1st in turnovers. This is the best defense in football, so their defense is going to have to do their closest impersonation of that defense when they're on the field.
Eagles haven't faced a defense. They didn't face a defense like this on their run last year, did they, CC?
No,
like this Bears
absolutely.
Defense?
No. If you look at what they did, they barely got through the Falcons game. And there's the people were under the myth, because they didn't necessarily watch the details. They say, well, the Vikings defense, they were top ranked. Yeah, but the Vikings defense was coming off of 24 points and a miracle. But The Saints had scored 24 on them in the second half and 200 yards of offense. So it wasn't like the Vikings defense came into that game, NFC Championship, playing great football. They got exposed even more in that game. This is what I think is one of the deciding advantages for the Bears is I've played in Soldier Field regular season, and I've been fortunate enough to play there in the postseason. All right, we had the Fog Bowl there, Philadelphia. Last time they were in the playoffs, I think, in Chicago, I was on that team. Man, that crowd, because it's already a hard place to play. So what they went through last year, getting the bye and being able to play the Falcons at home, and I was at the NFC Championship, that crowd and that decisive home field advantage that they had in that, I know Soldier Field will be rocking. They've had a sensational, maybe the surprise season of anyone in the NFL. And that defense, imagine a Bears defense, elite defense, playing in a playoff game in Soldier Field. I believe that's going to be special.
And when I reference Nick Foles, here's one thing he hasn't done in this stretch of he's won six consecutive elimination games for this team. He's yet to do it in even a semi-hostile environment. Last year, home playoff game, neutral site Super Bowl. This year, here's the stretch. At the Rams with a majority of Philly fans. Home for Houston and then at Washington. And if you watch that game, that turned into the link. They were chanting, "Fly Eagles, fly," in the concourses after the game. None of these games have been a true road environment, much less what C's talking about at Soldier Field. That's going to be a challenge for the Eagles offense, not just Nick Foles, as far as do you have to go to a silent count? Forget all the different things that the Bears can do to you, but if you go to a silent count and your offensive linemen don't have the added advantage of the get-off, right?
Well, there is no option but to run an offense with the silent count.
Right.
So let's not act like they have another option.
So
right?
I shouldn't say if. When you go to the silent count,
absolutely.
You are already at a disadvantage because you don't have the advantage of timing that offensive linemen typically do. That's something we've never seen the Nick Foles Eagles deal with. They didn't deal with it once in the postseason last year, haven't had to deal with it once in the run this year. That's something to watch as well.
Go ahead.
One thing, too, to watch is Matt Nagy. Watch out, because him and Doug Peterson are similar in a certain sense, but because they come from Andy Reid, but they utilize their personnel better. Chicago has so much more team speed on their offense. I want to watch how Nagy, in his first playoff experience, does he utilize that? Does he coach the same way against this Philadelphia defense? Is much improved, but I don't believe has the speed to be able to challenge what the Bears can do.
And that's what I was going to say, is that last year Doug Peterson spent a good portion of his time making this a very aggressive offense, taking chances with this offense, going for it on a lot of fourth downs in the red zone, and now you see a lot of what Matt
Nagy's it's easy to chance
well.
When you're playing at home.
Yeah, it's true. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, can Dak Prescott lead the Cowboys past the Seahawks on Saturday? That's next on First Things First. Time for us to go viral. Check this out. Young lady at the Bulls game last night going all out for the dunk contest. How cute.
I like that. What up, C? What?
I'm just
you putting your glasses on? You
just clean them.
Look at this. Little gymnast.
Little no-handed cartwheel into the split.
That's impressive, man. What do they call that, Jenna? You were, last time you did, Jenna once told us she was a gymnast. And then we found out the last time she did gymnastics, she was this girl's age.
Okay, but I still have it in me. I could do the backbend. I could do the no-handed cartwheel. I could maybe still
the no-handed cartwheel?
That's what she did.
You could do that.
I could work on it. I could do the one-handed cartwheel, faux show. I could do the two-handed cartwheel, definitely. Anyway, what she did was wonderful.
What she did was spectacular. Yeah.
Chargers, Ravens.
We're not doing Chargers, Ravens. We're doing Cowboys, Seahawks in a second. Jenna Wolf, on video tomorrow, no-handed cartwheel. Look for it, America.
Time for some stories to start your morning. Lord knows we need some. Yesterday, Giants GM Dave Gettleman held his end-of-the-season press conference. Gettleman didn't commit fully to Eli next season, but he spoke highly of him, saying, quote, "He can still make NFL throws. He's still got it." Meh, it's more lukewarm. CeCe, should the Giants bring back Eli for next season?
Well, I think the Giants should look at every option to try to improve every position on the team. And I like what Gettleman did yesterday. He didn't commit to Eli in 2019, so it makes it easier if they decide to make a decision. With that first-round pick, I would potentially be looking at a quarterback if there's not a guy there in free agency. If I believe I can improve the position, I'm going to do that.
If I'm the Giants, I am circling Dwayne Haskins' name if he comes out. I don't know that there's another quarterback that I've seen in college football, especially now that Herbert's going back, that that would warrant a top 10 pick. My concern if I'm the Giants is that six might not be good enough to get Haskins. You might have to trade an additional first rounder to get him. But if you don't get Haskins, I don't know what the option is other than Eli. You want to go with Kyle LaLetta, assuming he's not incarcerated? I don't know what their option is at quarterback position other than Eli unless they can find a way to get Haskins.
All right, moving on. John Elway and the Broncos let go of their head coach, Vance Joseph, earlier this week. So their next coach will be the third in four seasons. And for the first time since the 70s, the Broncos have posted back-to-back losing seasons. Nick, how do you evaluate Elway's tenure as Broncos general manager?
It's very difficult because he's been to two Super Bowls and won one, obviously has drafted some star players, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But at the most important spot, the spot he played, it's been an abject disaster the entire time he's been there, except for falling into Peyton Manning. So I think he said, you know, I am ultimately accountable for this, but then he held the coach accountable for it and firing Vance Joseph after 2 years. So he has to find a way to get this position at least kind of right. He hasn't even got it partially right since Peyton retired.
Yeah, I don't think they fell into Peyton Manning. And listening to what Peyton said, John Elway was instrumental in him coming there because of the support that he thought that he was going to get from Elway. So John Elway was responsible for those two Super Bowl appearances, and that's part of the cachet that he has there besides his legendary record. I believe if he wasn't a friend of the family and now they're going through ownership changes, they would potentially be looking at removing Elway. Yes. But because he has a special relationship there, I believe it's beyond what he did on the football field because he's done a lot in business. But his personal relationships there, I believe, is the glue that holds this relationship together.
All right, let's switch gears, turn to the NBA now. Last night, Anthony Davis was his usual awesome self, posted 34 points, grabbed 26 boards. However, the Pelicans still lost the game. They're now 4-16 on the road. After the game, Davis seemed extremely frustrated. Nick, what do you make of this?
Well, I mean, this is on the road of worst-case scenario for the Pelicans for this year, which is that Anthony Davis continues to play at a superstar near MVP level, and the team can't win. That's been the concern. Their only real path to keeping him was showing that they could build on the success they had last season, the success even once Boogie went down. And they have not shown any ability. In fact, they've regressed massively despite, 34-26 last night. And if you watch this game, see, they were getting beat in transition after made baskets. They weren't marking up defensively after made baskets. It was just a lack of effort by the guys around Anthony Davis. Yeah. This is very scary for the Pelicans.
There's two stories in this game. People in the NBA not surprised that they would struggle, don't have the depth, don't have a very good bench, knew they would miss Boogie Cousins. But also, what's going on in Brooklyn. Right now, if the playoffs started, Brooklyn Net, they would be playing in the playoffs. So, yeah, Anthony Davis is mad because they're not winning. Yeah, that's one story. They're going to probably end up trading him. But what's going on in Brooklyn is also very, very special. Their pace, the way they play, man, it was one-sided almost the style. They made a big comeback at the end.
All right, the OKC Thunder were in L.A. to face the Lakers, who are still without LeBron. Lakers were up 4 to begin the fourth quarter, but they still came up short and lost 107-100. Lakers now 1-3 without LeBron James in the lineup. Nick, how concerning are the Lakers' struggles in the fourth quarter since he's been out?
Listen, the fourth quarter has been the issue for this team since LeBron's been out. The big story from last night for Laker fans, probably Kyle Kuzma leaving with that back injury, getting an MRI, but it's hard to evaluate how concerning that is until we know what the extent of the injury is. But with or without Kuzma, since LeBron's been out, here's what's happened to them in fourth quarters. First game against the Kings, they're up 1 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 11. Outscored by 12 in the fourth quarter. Against the Clippers, down 2 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 9, outscored by 11. This last night against OKC, up 4 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 7, outscored by 11 points. Their fourth quarter scoring margin, their losses, is minus 12, minus 11, minus 11. Last night, the Thunder went on a 23-7 run, despite in the midst of that run missing 10 consecutive shots. The Thunder did. So their fourth quarter struggles are real, and it's something we saw similar to this team early in the year, if you remember, when LeBron wasn't orchestrating everything in the fourth quarter. They couldn't close out games. So now they're an injured team with three of their top six rotation guys and LeBron, Rondo, and Kuzma out, and they're a team that can't close. That's concerning. It should be highly concerning.
Yeah, they couldn't score the basketball. And when LeBron is out of the lineup, even though Lonzo is a point guard, there's still a lack of some type of leadership or just getting the offense initiated. They couldn't get any stops either. Couldn't make any shots and couldn't give up any stops. So in that formula, you're going to struggle. But as you mentioned, the injuries. How well is this team going to play with those three rotational players? You talk about being out of the lineup. I don't expect them to be much better than what they were. If they had Kuzma in the fourth quarter and they struggled to score the basketball because he's their best offensive player absent of LeBron James, then I would be a little more concerned. Without Kuz there, without LeBron there, I expected them to lose this game. I didn't expect them to be winning it for three and a half quarters, though.
The fact that they were up 85-80 early in the fourth quarter was a surprise. And then it was a collapse. But a little context to this, we all know how incredibly flawed the Cavs were last year. In the regular season last year, 39 times the Cavs had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They were 39-0 in those games. The Lakers this year, 22 times they've had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They are 16-6 in those games. So the inability to hold on to these fourth quarter leads has been an issue. It's one of the reasons this team, instead of being 3-1 without LeBron, is 1-3 without LeBron. That, plus the injuries, plus how packed the West is, makes this, it's not panic, but it's highly concerning for the Lakers. And they got to see what that MRI is, because if Kuzma's out extended with no Rondo and no LeBron, all of a sudden this becomes a very under-talented team.
I told you when they took the MRI of LeBron, they don't take them MRIs for no reason. They're expensive. And typically when a team does that, they already know that potentially there might be more damage there. LeBron heard a pop. Kuzma, this one right here, as far as a young player in a back, man, that's not something you want to be having. So, if I'm a Lakers fan, man, right now, not a good time.
All right, let's move back into football and talk some Dallas Cowboys. In a meaningless last game of the regular season, Dak Prescott was good. 4 touchdowns passes in a win over the Giants. If he could play 17 meaningless games against the Giants, he'd be money. Instead, he'll try to cap on that momentum as the Cowboys face the Seahawks Saturday night on Fox. Here's Jason Garrett on if Dak can build off last week's game.
Yeah, I do. But I do believe momentum is earned in life and in football. And you earn it by continuing doing the things the right way. And, you know, certainly a very good performance by Dak in our passing game the other day against the Giants. But you have to go earn it again. You have to earn it on the practice field, and you have to earn it throughout the next ball game.
All right, CC, Dak had a great, you know, week 17 game. What do you want to see from him now as they get ready to face Seattle?
Man, it's about winning. It's not about pitchers. It's not about being pretty. It's about winning and trying to play winning football. We know that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be a huge part. But for Dak, it's been a tale of two seasons. Before he had Amari Cooper, I think 180 yards passing. After that, around 70 more yards passing. So that's the Dak that we need to be able to see. They have to be throwing the ball for around 250 yards, and they don't want to throw the ball more than 40 times. So how can I have a limited number of attempts and still maximize that, because I need those big plays that I talked about? And based on the way Seattle plays, they typically play one high safety, either cover 3 or cover 1. A lot of that is a dream for a wide receiver, because typically you're going to get free access off the ball and be able to penetrate into the defense. Now, Seattle's defense has been playing much better, but to me, Dallas and their passing game going into the season, what was the question mark? Now we're in the playoffs. It is no different. They've practiced, they've improved on it, but now can they do it under the gun? That will be, if the Dallas Cowboys are going to win, they will not win by not throwing the ball and being efficient at throwing it.
I think I know your answer to this, because you and I talked when you weren't here, but the audience hasn't heard your opinion on what happened in week 17. So I just want to go back to that for a moment. I've been saying it was as meaningful of a, quote, meaningless game as I've seen, because the question mark has been Dak. He didn't have any all-pro offensive linemen, didn't have his all-pro running back, and the defense did not play well, and he went up and down the field. All of a sudden, Blake Jarwin is now something I guess Seattle has to pay some attention to. He makes a 4th-and-15 throw to potentially tie the game, and then the 2-point conversion play where he extends the play to end up winning the game. If momentum's a real thing in sports, Dak finally, for really the first time all year, has it at the exact right time. What was your takeaway from if Dak gained anything on this past Sunday playing the Giants?
Right. I must have watched the different game, because I didn't leave there thinking, wow, Dallas is going to be ready to roll into the playoffs. No, because unless they're getting the ball to Amari Cooper, Dak is doing what a quarterback's supposed to do. And there's a reason why they had him out there. It wasn't because they had a lot of faith in him.
It was because he needed the reps and needed absolutely.
Yeah, so momentum is real in sports. But some momentum is just false momentum. All right? I don't believe as a team without the offensive line, that offensive line has not played great. So what tells me that they're going to play great? And I don't think there's going to be a carryover. Because you know something? If Dallas loses this game, what are we going to say? We don't care nothing about week number 17. It's about winning.
Of course. No, the point that I'm making is that the big question mark on the team all year has been lack of explosive plays. And the only reason the Cowboys are in the tier they're in instead of up a tier is because of questions with their passing attack. We know how good the defense can be. We know when healthy how good the offensive line can be. And Zeke has been a superstar from the first moment we saw him in the NFL. Right. It's been about questions about Dak and in the beginning of the year, did they have a number one receiver? And then now his relationship and getting on the same page with Amari. I think that even if it's false belief, throwing for 380 yards and four touchdowns in your final regular season game is a step where he can say to himself, man, like, what did I do in the last playoff game? I was down double digits to Aaron Rodgers, and I orchestrated a comeback. Now, they couldn't finish it off, but it went field goal, field goal, field goal to end that game. I thought Dak played very well the last time he was in this position, a playoff game at home where they are a slight favorite or a favorite. And so for the Cowboys, I think they can play with Seattle as long as the Dak Prescott-Russell Wilson matchup isn't a blowout. As long as I don't think Dak needs to outplay Russell Wilson, but if he can keep that close, if that can be a lot of 10-9 rounds, then I think Zeke and the defense and the fact that they're at home can tilt this game in Dallas's favor. The problem for Dallas is I know Russell Wilson's going to play well. I can't remember the last time Russell Wilson didn't show up and play well in a playoff game. I know that if Seattle can't run the football, which they might have trouble against the Dallas front, Russell Wilson will find a way
right,
to make plays.
And the flip isn't necessarily
true. I don't
with
know that's true with Dak. I think Dak can have the confidence based on what he did in his most recent picture.
Yeah.
But that's my concern for the Cowboys in this football.
The reason why I don't give it that amount of credit is because there's no pressure. You're in the playoffs. The coaches decide these guys can't play. All right, I'm going to play. I'm still a young player. Like, everything is still based on winning. So, for me, Dak Prescott we've seen these big games by Dak. And then what happened? The next week, what?
Regress.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. So, that's on the board to be able to happen in this game. They have to be able to generate some big plays. Now, they have changed the offense up. They do have the tight end involved. Let's see if we can do that in the playoffs. Dak can't take sacks, all right? So, when you tell me Dak is not getting sacked, he's getting rid of the football compared to getting sacks, then I'll be like, okay, that's real momentum because he's learned. Because we know if you get sacked in the NFL, the chance of you scoring points are practically zero. So, you can't give away series by getting sacked. So, when Dak improves in that area, and then Chris Carter maybe will be on that bandwagon.
And then one note on the Dak taking sacks. Yes, the offensive line hasn't played up to the level of a couple years ago, but you sent me yesterday, I thought, a really interesting number, which is their Pro Football Focus sent out a stat about the most sacked quarterbacks where they did it to themselves, essentially, where the sack was on the quarterback. 15 of Dak's sacks this year were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. That's number one in football. Now, that still means there's about another 35 times he's been sacked that wasn't on him, but that's one a game. That's one drive a game that is totally stalled, or your opportunity to score a touchdown or points is almost entirely removed because Dak's either holding on the ball too long or rolling into pressure instead of rolling away from pressure.
Well, the Cowboys better hope they don't get too far behind. Otherwise, it does fall on Dak to try to get them back into it. Coming up, have we seen the end of Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh? We'll hear from Mike Tomlin ahead. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Our guy, Coach Eric Mangini, is here.
Good to be here,
Coach. Good to see you.
Good
morning.
Great to have you. The Houston Texans have big weekend plans. They'll face division rival Indianapolis on Sunday. Many surprised they're even here, given the way they started their season, losing their first three games, but they bounced back to win 9 in a row, claim the AFC South, and finish the season 11-5. It's been quite a journey for this team and for Deshaun Watson, who missed all but 6 games last year. Here's more from the Texans quarterback.
Just look at the season, starting 0-3, you know, and then, you know, tacking on 9 and winning out, 10 of the last 12. I mean, it's everything we earned. We earned the right to be here. We earned the right to do what we did Sunday and be champs in the division. But you know, it's a new year, new season, and, you know, we got to start over and try to be 1-0 this week and try to continue it. Played in a lot of big games before, you know, in college and stuff, but, I mean, you can't really, you know, pick college playoffs with the NFL. This is, you know, the hardest business, you know, top notch. It's a whole new season, whole new, you know, speed of game. So it's going to be, you know, new for me, of course, because it's my first one, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Coach, it's a big stage for Deshaun Watson. Do you think this Texan team is getting the respect that it deserves after the season it had from around the league?
Well, the thing about respect, you remember the Mae West quote, if you have to tell people you're a lady, then you're not. And then if you ever have to ask for respect, then it's probably, you know, not merited. But in this case, I think they do merit respect. Now, they made it a little bit tougher on themselves by starting as big in the hole as they did, and then really lost two out of the last four games. But they've also got to go into this game, and they've got to establish that it's not going to be T.Y. Hilton's place. It's not going to be Andrew Luck being the best quarterback on the field. They've got to find a way to slow down that offense. They've got to do things differently than they have in the first two games in order for them to take that jump. And for Deshaun Watson, I think that he's going to produce a lot of things on the ground. But one thing he can't do is continue this sack trend that he's had all season. And look, saying that at this point in the playoffs, it's probably going to continue the way it has. Mm-hmm. But those sacks at some point, that's going to be the difference in the game. And he's got to make good decisions.
You mentioned T.Y. Hilton. People should understand there's basically no receiver in the NFL that plays better in a building than T.Y. Hilton does in Houston. Seven games in that stadium, NRG Stadium in Houston, 133 yards per game in those seven. The last two times he's played there, 199, nine catches for 199, five catches for 175, and two scores. One of those games was last year when the team wasn't good and Luck wasn't playing. He still showed up and dominated. They won in that building the year they only won two football games. Like, this is, the Colts have always had success against the Houston Texans, and T.Y. Hilton's been dominant against the Houston Texans. You mentioned the Deshaun Watson and the sacks, and we talked about earlier in the show, Dak Prescott, 15 of his sacks were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. 14 of Deshaun's were on him. Like, he not on the offensive line. But that also means, I mean, the guy was sacked 62 times. So that means 48 times this year there was nothing that quarterback could do, and it was either breakdown in protection or overpowering defensive linemen on offensive line. That's been the issue with the Texans all year, is their biggest weakness, the place they have the least money, the least draft capital, is their offensive line. And the Colts have shown you over these last 10 games, if you have a glaring weakness up front like that, they don't need Andrew Luck to be dominant to beat you. They can beat you defensively. They got the number one scoring defense in football over the last 10 weeks. They can beat you that way as well.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I want to watch in this game. T.Y. Hilton, the stats and stuff are great. We know about DeAndre Hopkins, his lack of notoriety, now starting to get that with the best sure-handed receiver that we have. Who are the others? Who are going to be the other players, either the tight ends or coming out of the backfield, to be able to help these players? Because whichever offense is able to help that star receiver, because I don't believe those star receivers, like Coach Mangini said, they're going to try to take those guys out of the game. So which other group can help support their superstar receiver? And I believe that Deshaun, his legs are going to be more important in this game, because I wouldn't sit back there in this game. This is not college. This is not Alabama. This is the NFL, and the more times you get sacks, the more drives are killed, the more possessions are lost, and then you start to feel the pressure. So once you get through that first half, the second half of the playoff games are totally different, because you know you got 30 minutes and you're getting ready to go on vacation. So those adjustments at halftime become more critical. So for me, if I'm Deshaun, right now it's about winning games and moving the sticks. And I would try to concentrate a little bit more on utilizing my legs in the playoffs, because that part NFL defenses are not ready for, and there's nothing more frustrating.
And with Pro Football Focus, I respect the work that they do, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
It's not a science.
And I'm sure if we talked to the coaching staff, they'd probably have a different number in terms of how many sacks he was responsible for versus the Pro Football Focus number. And besides that, there are times that the O-line is going to break down But quarterbacks will see that and get rid of the ball. You can't just say, oh, it's his fault. I'm going to eat this sack or I'm going to try to extend this play when there's no chance to actually.
The force multipliers do something even with those negative plays.
And it's the same thing with quarterbacks. Sometimes they throw a bad ball, and the good receivers, they knock it down so it can't get intercepted, and everybody plays a role in that. Now, Deshaun Watson, to me, was one of the most unique guys that I've ever seen with the football in his hand in college. And I remember wondering how it was going to fit, how it was going to work in the NFL, but I knew what a problem he was going to create with his feet. And I think that's got to be a big part of what he does this weekend.
And where Deshaun deserves an enormous amount of credit, this last year during that outstanding run that he had, he did it despite turning the ball over nearly every game. The first six games of this year, he had an interception or two in every single game of the first six. In the last 10, 9 of 10 games, no picks. So maybe one of the reasons that the sack numbers are as high is he's not taking chances with the football. He is eating it more often. Now, you'd like it to be neither a sack nor an interception. But the one bugaboo with him, even during his great run last season, was a lot of turnovers. I think led the league in interceptions in that stretch, just had overwhelming touchdown numbers. During this stretch of great football by the Texans, he has taken care of the ball as well as any quarterback in the NFL. He's going to have to do that this week against the Colts, because one thing I don't think we can rely on for the Texans is some huge defensive plays up front, which is what they have made their money on defensively, because the Colts have been the best offensive line in the league the last 10 games of the year, only giving up 8 sacks. There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part, it's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's PristineAuction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to PristineAuction.com.
See, there's no doubt he can play. There's no doubt if the play breaks down, he can run. We all know that. But what do you say to a guy who's still a relatively young quarterback? He did miss a lot of last season, getting ready for a big stage, his first playoff game. There's a lot of pressure around Houston for him to sort of save this team and get them back into the real competitive talk of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really hard for guys who come from college and are dual-threat quarterbacks, because once they get into the league, they hear what the voices are saying. Oh, he'll never be a pocket. So what they do is they stay in the pocket too much. Dak Prescott is an example of that. Deshaun is an example of that. So in trying to become a pocket quarterback, they become stationary compared to being athletic. It's the playoffs. It's about winning, and I'm sure the coaching staffs will make sure that the young quarterbacks know that. Use your legs when you get an opportunity, because in these playoff games, man, additional first down, an additional drive, you get another look at that defense. It becomes so important to stay on the field. When I've experienced difficult defenses in the playoffs, it's because we couldn't move the chains. We couldn't get any type of momentum. So watch team momentum. Watch teams that are able to generate first downs to keep their momentum going, and which quarterback can make them little extra plays to give them an extra chance, I believe is going to be a huge storyline Saturday and Sunday.
And with Donovan McNabb, what it became later in his career is he would run the ball on third down in 2 minutes in the red zone. In those critical situations, that's where he was more likely to run the ball. And I'd say the same thing with any quarterback that has that ability. If you're going to take those chances, take it in the most critical situations. They use that skill set in the red zone, in 2 minutes, on third down, as opposed to first and 10, where maybe you're taking a hit or taking a sack, and when it's You know, it's not quite the same return on investment.
Highest leverage situations.
Highest leverage situations default to that if that's available. What it calls for, yeah.
All right, Coach, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, is Mike Tomlin handling the Antonio Brown situation the right way? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a Big Ten showdown on Fox as number 8 Michigan State hits the hardwood against conference foe Ohio State. Catch it all 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Coach Mangini. All right, Coach, things are getting interesting in Pittsburgh. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin addressed the media yesterday. A room full of inquiring minds asking about what in the world is happening with Antonio Brown. Did he ask to be traded? Reports are that he did. Tomlin said yesterday he didn't. A lot of he said, he said from this story. Here's more now from head coach Mike Tomlin.
Obviously, we take his lack of communication, his lack of presence, particularly on Saturday prior to the game, to be something that's very significant and will be handled appropriately so. I'm not going to speculate on trades and things of that nature. We haven't formally received a request in that regard, so I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to speculate in terms of where the discipline might go and things of that nature. Just know that it's going to be addressed. And it will be addressed and needs to be addressed for obvious reasons. And when we're talking about our darkest hour, okay, we're talking about playing to win a game and needing other dominoes to fall for us to be in the tournament and a guy not communicating, that is a real element of discussion.
Does there reach a point where it becomes more problematic than it's useful?
Certainly.
Coach, he sounds upset. He sounds like not the Mike Tomlin that we're sometimes used to, where he sweeps everything under the rug and things aren't a big deal. He sounds like this is a big deal.
Well, it's upsetting. How could it not be upsetting? You have one of your best players who not only doesn't show up but doesn't communicate, and you are playing for your playoff life and for the division, and that's a hard thing. Now, that being said, you know what you're getting into most of the time you sign a contract extension. You're not tricked by people's
sometimes in free agency, you can have some excuses.
Actually,
because you miss a little bit.
If they're not in the building and you don't have that firsthand knowledge, yeah, you can be fooled occasionally there. But this is a player that was in the building, and I'm sure there's probably way more to this story than what we're seeing right now. And if you want to live in that world and you're gonna commit big money to players that can be unpredictable at times, then you better be ready to live with unpredictability. And that's the world that the Steelers have lived in for a long time, and it's paid off for them quite a bit. It's not the world that I was from. It's not necessarily the world that I believe in, but other people have found a way to make that work. Now, that being said, you own what happens when it happens, because you went in to it with your eyes wide open.
This is, but even by Steelers standards, this is an extreme circumstance. You guys both, Chris and you, Coach, talk about how the public doesn't understand how many, for lack of a better term, crazy guys are in an NFL locker room and how many things happen in a locker room that is just maybe the general public would be shocked by, but for you guys, it's just kind of just part of going to a very unique office, right? And so, and we were talking off the air about a guy who you just didn't know on any given day what guy you were getting as far as in the meeting room, as far as what his general demeanor was. That's one thing, and every team's got to deal with that. It's another thing when a guy goes AWOL. Like, that is not typical. That is not, there aren't a litany of examples of guys in what is essentially a playoff week of Antonio Brown's stature or of anyone's stature not showing up for a couple days, and then the agent calls the coach day of the game, hey, my guy's gonna play. Like, even by the Steelers' standard of it's a different family with different relationships, this is an extreme enough circumstance where what would typically be our year-end press conference where we're addressing everything, they had a press conference where Tomlin was asked midway through the press conference a question about the middle linebacker position, and he flatly said, listen, we'll address all that later. We are here to address a particular circumstance, and it's the future of Antonio Brown and the recent history of Antonio Brown. And I just feel like Tomlin was put in an impossible spot where he had no choice but to not play AB on Sunday, right? We all agree there was no chance he could say, okay, when Rosenhaus texts him, all right, good, he'll be active. So he is put in a position where he can't play a guy. We saw what happened to their offense without him. Juju had a great year, but all of a sudden when Juju was getting AB's coverage, that offense grinded to a halt.
What would have happened, though, if they lost that game and the Ravens
and
lost
the Ravens,
that's and what, he didn't play?
Right.
There would be a bunch of people saying, how could you not play Antonio Brown? How could you possibly put the rest of the organization and the rest of the team at such a disadvantage and not play that guy? But what I'm saying is if they had lost that game
and the Ravens had lost and
the Steelers were out, or you know, however it would have worked out.
Exactly right. If Baker had pulled off the upset and the Steelers had lost, so they would have been in with a win, and they lose 13-10 because they can't. Exactly. What is the
narrative? The world would be crying about, why didn't he play? How could you let this minor infraction or this misunderstanding push you out of the playoffs? And these things happen, and these things happen way more than is brought out publicly. And, you know, at this point, they've got a whole offseason to figure it out before they start the regular season.
Football players are like kids, and kids will push you as far as they feel like they can get away with as far as their parents. Now, Nick, you said that they put Mike Tomlin in a
impossible position.
Well, Mike Tomlin, in the way that he has led the team, allowed this to happen because he left the facility on Wednesday after a dispute with the star quarterback. Didn't come on Thursday. Now, to me, I played 16 years in the league, and I'm talking about, man, I did a lot of stuff. But it was never acceptable for me to miss work or any of my teammates to miss work. Now, a handful of times, there were examples. I'm talking about a handful. And I played with a bunch of rowdy, crazy. I'm talking about guys hung out all night. But there was not one day where it was acceptable for all of us not to be there. I was always taught to either come to work and report in, and I'll decide if we're going to send you home. So these things that Mike Tomlin has allowed to do, and the only reason why they're having that press conference, because the toothpaste got out and we was able to see it. The injury report was false, and he knew that ultimately the public was getting ready to know. So he tried to get ahead of this. So Mike Tomlin, and the way he's decided to manage the Pittsburgh Steelers, allows something like this to happen. Because as a coach, Dennis Green told me, listen, don't embarrass me. Don't put me in a position, because if you do, I will choose what's best for the team. I will not choose you. So Mike Tomlin, yeah, he's got to be soul searching, because to me, his career is in the balance. What kind of coach is he going to be? And to me, I believe this is going to be a watershed moment as far as how long he's going to be able to stay with the Steelers, or is 2019 that going to be the last year of the Steelers as we know it?
What about Antonio Brown? What do you think the future is within this organization for Antonio Brown?
Well, the future depends on what happens over the next few months. The future depends on Antonio's perspective. Does he come in? Does he have a sit down with ownership, with Mike Tomlin? Do they get to a point where they actually understand how it got to this point? And being able to sit down at a table and say, okay, this is what happened. Why did it happen? How is it never going to happen again? And there'd be a real commitment to doing that, and some honesty about how you got there. To me, then he's back. Now, if ownership has reached the point of no return, then it doesn't matter what he says. They're gonna push it off.
I remember one time with Randy Moss, him and I had messed up the schedule. We were getting ready to go to a playoff game. Not going to tell you which one. But Moss had messed up the schedule, and I had called him on the phone. He was going to get his haircut, and I was like, bro, we got a team meet. And he was like, man, I'm already at the barbershop. I'm already downtown. I was like, man, I'm going to the facility. I called Coach Green. Hey, man, Randy's going to be – and we were scrambling because he was going to be 10 or 15 minutes late. I have never been in any type of locker room where a guy wasn't here that we weren't concerned about his well-being and all we had to find out. So what they're doing in Pittsburgh is stuff that I have never seen in the NFL.
I want to ask you a question, because you said something I've heard a lot of people say this week, which is, and it's similar to one of the things you've said, which is, if you're not coaching it, you're allowing it. Or am I misquoting that? Along those lines?
If you're either teaching it or tolerating it.
Sure. And with Tomlin, you're saying he allowed this situation to come to pass. Once they paid Antonio Brown a second time, he had his rookie deal, got the big extension. They then gave him a second big extension. Where was the point where Mike Tomlin, what could he have done leading up to this? What could he have done? I mean, we wouldn't have, none of us thought that when Antonio threw the cooler last year, you bench him for a game. We all thought, listen, that's a fiery player, that happens. And you don't, and I remember you saying you don't penalize the other 52 guys. Like, but you can't take money from
him. That narrative right there, to me, is the problem. That's a fiery player, that happens.
Yeah, you have a video of that the next day, and you show it to the team, and you tell them, I'm not going to allow it. It's not acceptable behavior.
You start talking, the scouts will do that a lot of time in the meeting room. He's a little bit immature. He's a fiery player. He's competitive. All these euphemisms for this is a disruptive guy that's going to have to, you know, be handled in a different way.
Sure, but I mean, practically speaking, because I remember us talking about that the day after and the week after, and nobody thought you bench him. You have limited what you can fine a guy, and especially
when a guy
makes that
time. What you have to do is, man, you have to be consistent before the team.
Okay.
The rules apply to everyone. And you have to be able to discipline guys, and you have to be able to chastise guys, superstar guys, in front of the other players. Okay. Because it lets the other players know that we're all on the same footy. Somewhere along the way, Mike Tomlin has allowed the Pittsburgh Steelers, not only A.B., Ben Roethlisberger, L. Bell, and a bunch of them. I got stories like Ryan Clark, but I decide not to utilize them the way Ryan used them in saying that they created this monster. Mike Tomlin has been a part of it. If you're the head coach, you should take some of the responsibility.
Can you change that? As the head coach, can you change the way your players see you if you've been there for so long, doing it one way for so long?
Look, if you're going to benefit from these types of players, then you also got to live with the downside of these types of players. And that's a decision that you make organizationally. That's a decision that you make in the draft room, in free agency. And you can manage it to some degree on a day-to-day basis. But there's a level of behavior that at some point doesn't make sense. And you bought into it.
Right.
You bought it.
All right, we got to take a break. Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, is the Bears defense about to bring the Eagles' run to a crashing halt? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown in Dallas with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. In the NFC wildcard game, it all starts 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Every game this weekend looks awesome.
All right, we'll get to we'll get to the Bears playoff run in a second. First, Valpo's Marcus Golder hits the half-court game winner against Illinois State.
I mean, that looks almost the exact same spot on the court Jerry West hit a shot to win a finals game back in the 60s. Valpo, it's a hell of a win against Illinois State?
Yeah, I had a brother go there and play basketball. Yeah, we got a bunch of people, athletes in the family.
Ain't no big deal.
All right, on to the NBA. Sixers Suns, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, we're weird because we're good. Yeah, that would be weird to you.
Look at him go.
Euro step. That's a 7'1" man doing a Euro step from the top of the key.
Oh, yeah. Now that's weird. 7'1" can shoot the three, now I've added this to my game. That's why most people think he's going to be special.
Oh, man. Look at that.
Trevor Ariza now on the Wizards. Strong dunk. Not bad for a player in year 15.
Well, go ahead, old man. This is an old man dunk right here.
Yeah, it is.
This old man. He used to be a really good athlete. Now defensive specialist and three-point shooting specialist.
This took every last bit of his verticality to get up there. I hadn't seen that highlight. I like that.
Celtics, T-Wolves. Big Cat, bam, big yam.
All right, good for Big Cat on this play, but the story from this game is Gordon Hayward.
Oh, yes.
0 points in the previous night out. Last night goes for 35. First time as a Celtic, he's looked like Gordon Hayward.
I think
he heard
your comments, bro, that he was washed up.
I never called him washed up.
A shell of himself.
I did say he's a shit, but it's not his fault. I didn't say he's washed up. Take
Whose
a long time to come
it?
Off that injury. The yeah. injury's fault.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.